If you had to pick the heroes of 20th century metafiction, the Argentine writer Jorge Luis Borges would be at the top of the list. By the 1960s, Borges was celebrated around the world for his strange metaphysical stories about labyrinthian libraries and indecipherable languages. Over the years, he's had a profound influence on contemporary writers, from Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Umberto Eco, and Salman Rushdie, to such American writers as Thomas Pynchon and John Barth. Jorge Luis Borges died in 1986. Just a few years before that, Steve Paulson interviewed Borges. In the years since, Steve has had plenty of time to reflect on his encounter with one of the world's greatest writers.
The year was 1983. I was just out of grad school trying to break in as a radio reporter when I got the call that Borges had agreed to do the interview with me the next morning. He was in town to give a big lecture and had some extra time at his hotel. Now, I should say that I was not remotely ready to do this interview. I'd read a few of his stories, and that's about all the preparation I'd done. I knew I was in over my head. The next day, I was greeted at the door by a beautiful woman, Maria Kodama, who later married Borges shortly before his death. By this time, Jorge Luis Borges was an old man, quite frail, but he had a regal air about him and was clearly aware that visitors were prepared to sit at his feet to soak in whatever literary magic he had to offer.
I would like to tell you that I never look for a subject. I let subjects find me. And then I write the way they want to be written. I try to meddle as little as I can with my own work. Especially I don't want my opinions to intrude in what I write. And of course I have many opinions. Well, after, well, when one is 84, one is chock full of opinions and prejudices, so I try to keep them out of my work.
I have to say I was entranced by this vision of writing, but I had no idea what he was talking about. What did he mean he didn't want to meddle in his own stories? Isn't meddling precisely what writers do? Or did Borges have some special pipeline to the muses?
Well, I have a certain kind of dream given me. In the case of a tale, I'm always given the beginning and the end. And then I have to invent what happens in between. Then I will have to find out whether that particular tale, well, should be staged at the end of the 19th century or in some dim Orient. That's up to me. But I'm always given something. I never look for subjects.
Now, I should mention that Borges had been blind for nearly 30 years by the time I met him. He'd long since stopped writing those mind-bending metaphysical fables that had made him famous. I later learned that he'd tried reading by Braille, but then lost the feeling in his fingers. Most of his work since the late 50s consisted of giving lectures and dictating poems. But he'd also been named director of the National Library in Buenos Aires, a library with nearly a million books. It was an odd job to give a blind man, but somehow perfect for Borges, with his encyclopedic knowledge of literature and philosophy, his nearly mythic powers of memory, and above all, his love of books.
The universe, which others call the library, is composed of an indefinite and perhaps infinite number of hexagonal galleries, with vast air shafts between, surrounded by very low railings.
That's the opening sentence to a story called The Library of Babel. I have to say, I've never forgotten that image of a great library as a universe unto itself.
We also know of a superstition of that time, that of the man of the book. On some shelf, in some hexagon, men reasoned, there must exist a book which is the formula and perfect compendium of all the rest. Some librarian has gone through it, and he is analogous to a god. In the language of this zone, vestiges of this remote functionary's cult still persist. Many wandered in search of him. I pray to the unknown gods that a man, just one, even though it were thousands of years ago, may have examined and read it.
The American writer David Foster Wallace has called Borges a mystic, or at least a sort of radical Neoplatonist, for whom human thought, behavior, and history are all the product of one big mind. You can see this idea popping up in some of his stories, with the hero desperately trying to find the one perfect book that would capture the wisdom of all books. Of course, it's a hopeless quest, but one that demanded a lifetime of reading. Borges thought a good writer is by definition a great reader, and reading, perhaps even more than writing, is the highest calling.
My real destiny is to be a man of letters. Perhaps not a good writer, but a good reader, at least. I think I am a good reader, and in many languages.
For Borges, there's no clear dichotomy between fiction and nonfiction. Some of his most famous stories read like mock scholarly essays. The implicit message is it's impossible to say anything original. But there are all kinds of wonders to be found by reinterpreting what's already been written. Take one of his most famous stories, Pierre Menard, author of The Quixote. It's the tale of a man who rewrites the great novel by Cervantes.
He did not want to compose another Quixote, which is easy, but the Quixote itself. Needless to say, he never contemplated a mechanical transcription of the original. He did not propose to copy it. His admirable intention was to produce a few pages which would coincide word for word and line for line with those of Miguel de Cervantes.
So Pierre Menard doesn't change a word as he rewrites Don Quixote. I mean, not a single word. But he agonizes over the writing because he's a 20th century man steeped in Nietzsche and Bertrand Russell who's compelled to write a 17th century novel. To do this, Menard has to rediscover the Catholic faith and forget modern history. And how does Menard's Quixote compare to the original? Well, here's the kicker. Even though they're identical, Borges tells us Menard's version is almost infinitely richer.
It is a revelation to compare Menard's Don Quixote with Cervantes. The latter, for example, wrote, Part 1, Chapter 9, "Truth, whose mother is history, rival of time, depository of deeds, witness of the past, exemplar and advisor to the present, and the future's counselor." Written in the 17th century, written by the lay genius Cervantes, this enumeration is a mere rhetorical praise of history. Menard, on the other hand, writes, "Truth, whose mother is history, rival of time, depository of deeds, witness of the past, exemplar and advisor to the present, and the future's counselor." History, the mother of truth. The idea is astounding. Menard, a contemporary of William James, does not define history as an inquiry into reality, but as its origin. Historical truth for him is not what has happened. It is what we judge to have happened.
So what should we make of this strange metafictional world where all books refer to other books? It's tempting to say it's nothing but a game, and certainly this is one writer who loved to play with his readers. To me, Borges is a philosopher dressed up as a short story writer. He once said he never wrote a novel because he didn't have that much to say, but the truth is, he was temperamentally suited to a more condensed style of writing, where one idea, for instance, rewriting the Quixote without changing a word, could itself be the plot.
Besides, I think a novel stands for padding. Even in the case of Dickens or Joseph Conrad would be the novelist. While a short story can be essential. If you take the story by Rudyard Kipling, for example, I think every word is really needed.
In the last decades of his life, Borges had become a larger-than-life figure who was expected to dispense wisdom from on high. I went to see his public lecture the night after I interviewed him and was disheartened to hear him use the same language, even some of the same phrases that he'd used with me, like the bit about always being given the beginning and end of a story and having to invent the middle. But then Borges had long since realized that literary fame was just another kind of racket. In fact, he'd already commented on his own celebrity in his wonderful essay, Borges and I.
The other one, the one called Borges, is the one things happen to. I walk through the streets of Buenos Aires and stop for a moment, perhaps mechanically now, to look at the arch of an entrance hall and the grillwork on the gate. I know of Borges from the mail and see his name on a list of professors or in a biographical dictionary. I like hourglasses, maps, 18th century topography, the taste of coffee, and the prose of Stevenson. He shares these preferences, but in a vain way that turns them into the attributes of an actor. It would be an exaggeration to say that ours is a hostile relationship. I live, let myself go on living, so that Borges may contrive his literature. And this literature justifies me. Years ago, I tried to free myself from him and went from the mythologies of the suburbs to the games with time and infinity. But those games belong to Borges now, and I shall have to imagine other things. Thus, my life is a flight, and I lose everything. And everything belongs to oblivion, or to him. I do not know which of us has written this page.
During our interview, Borges joked about his own death. He said most of his friends were now pushing up daisies. He died 3 years later. Over the years, I've wished I could go back to 1983 and talk to him again, this time around having read all his stories and essays and the major critical studies of his work. I'd ask Borges why he was so fond of nearly forgotten British writers like Chesterton and Stevenson, and what he thought of the writers who followed in his footsteps, about García Márquez's experiments with magic realism, about David Foster Wallace's own obsession with footnotes. I'd also press him on his failure to write anything more substantial, or at least longer than 20 pages. Did he really value brevity so much, or was he simply incapable of creating a more involved fictional world? Now, I might add, if I were a character in a Borges story, I might very well go back and interview him, and wouldn't that be something, an interview with a dead man, or maybe with the benefit of time travel and a brain implant, morphing the mind of a middle-aged radio producer into his 23-year-old former self. Now, that would be a story I'd want to read. Somehow, I think Borges might approve.
That's Steve Paulson with an essay on Jorge Luis Borges. The Argentine writer died in 1986, and his books continue to be devoured by new generations of writers. His most famous collection of stories and essays is called Labyrinths.